No matter where you live in Wisconsin, I think the wildlife you and I experience most often are our birds. I love the music, especially in the spring. There's a cardinal. There's some cardinals that sit outside our bedroom window, and I love the cardinal song, and I love the song of all the birds. Anyway, they add music and they add some color to our lives. But there's a report this month from BirdLife International that warns against us taking our birds for granted, and we'll be talking about that and talking about how we can protect our bird populations today with Karen Etter Hales, Executive Secretary of the Madison Audubon Society. It's an official chapter of the National Audubon Society. They've protected more than 3,000 acres of wildlife habitat here in South Central Wisconsin. Jeff Potter has been with us in the past. He directs communications for the Natural Resources Foundation in Madison, and it is a nonprofit foundation, works to promote the protection and enjoyment of Wisconsin's public lands, its waters and wildlife. And really pleased to have Jeff. Jeff, welcome back, by the way. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Larry.
And Karen Etter Hale, thank you for coming by.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, pleased to have you with us today. Well, I mentioned this report from BirdLife International about, you know, kind of warning against taking birds for granted. Karen, what conclusions were reached about our global bird populations?
Well, this State of the World's Birds, which just came out last month, was rather alarming. It showed sharp declines in many of our common and widespread species throughout the world, which indicates that we should really be listening to what the birds are telling us. Birds can be found almost anywhere in the world, so they're a very good barometer of the biodiversity of our world, which we all depend upon. We're losing ground with various things. Habitat loss is the biggest, but
sure,
there's also climate change, invasive species, and human population increases. So those all kind of work together. So it signals a widening environmental problem, but there's a lot that we can do, and that's part of the report as well, is what kind of actions we can take.
So there's some positive information in this as well, Jeff.
Well, yeah, I think the report is a caution, but it's not a collapse. That is, you know, there's still time for people to do things. As you mentioned, birds are such an important part of the wildlife experience that people have, especially from a young age. You know, looking out your backyard window, I mean, even if you're downtown Milwaukee, you're going to see birds there. And we want to, you know, encourage folks to do what they can to help protect birds. Wisconsin, people may not realize, is really at a crossroads for two of North America's, what I like to call, migration superhighways.
Mm-hmm.
In the east, we've got the Great Lakes. And in the west, we've got the Mississippi River. And both of these water bodies are really important to migrating bird populations from all over the Western Hemisphere. And so we're in a special place. In fact, about half of all the bird species that can be found in the United States can be found in Wisconsin, more than 400 species. So it's a great place for us to recognize the value and the quality of life that birds give us. But it's also a great opportunity for those of us that want to do something about the decline and provide some protection to take some action. And there's a couple of things that we're doing. At the foundation in particular, we've started a bird protection fund that provides funding for priority bird projects throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And this fund is basically brought together people like Karen and other leading bird conservationists from around the state to advise on the highest priority conservation projects we can take, whether it's habitat protection, recovery and reintroduction of species like the whooping crane that people are familiar with, or even some public education and outreach projects like the statewide birding nature trail guides that we've supported. All of these are seen as sort of, if you care about birds and you don't know where to put your money or how to support it, the Bird Protection Fund basically brings these experts together and say, these are our highest priorities, the most efficient use of our funds that we can provide. And so we created that fund essentially to allow people to make those gifts to support those birds.
Now, are these high priority areas, are they the birds that are most in danger? Are they the ones that look like they might become endangered? Well, how do we scale that, Gail? Karen?
Well, we're looking at all birds that are breeding here in Wisconsin, that are migrating through, and that come down to winter here, like the juncos that just arrived in the last week or so.
Yeah.
And there are certain criteria that have to be met for important bird areas. We have 86 of those identified in the state, and they have to They're not just for endangered and threatened species, but for those other species that may be here in significant numbers.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Upper Mississippi River has about 80 or 90% of the world's canvasback ducks coming through mm-hmm. each year. So that's significant and is one of the globally important bird areas in the state.
So that's one example. You know, Elaine in Richmond has a question for you, too, so I'm going to turn to her. By the way, if you want to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org and email us a question, too. Elaine, hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I miss the red-headed woodpeckers that we always have. I live at Lake Lorain area, and we're surrounded by woods, and we've always had red-headed woodpeckers, and we always put out the suet for them, you know, all year round. I don't think they migrate, so we haven't seen one since maybe July.
Well, actually, red-headed woodpeckers do migrate south, but they are in trouble. They're one of the species that's of concern in Wisconsin, and we believe it's mostly the loss of savanna habitat. Those oak woodlands that are wide open, and they used to be pastured, so the grass and shrub layer was kept pretty low. That's what they really prefer, which is probably also true for the whippoorwills, which have also declined. There's other problems with starlings taking over their nesting holes and other things, but a lot of it has to do with habitat. And when they restored the oak savannas up at Nisida,
mm-hmm.
the red-headed woodpeckers returned almost immediately. It was a real success story. That's one place you can go and find a lot of red-headed woodpeckers.
You have the right time in the morning. You'll just sit there. I mean, you can even walk back there or drive back on some of the roads, and within mm-hmm. a few minutes, you'll see five or six redheads just flying from the oak to oak. So it's a sign. You know, there's so many signs, Larry. I think we hear a lot of bad environmental news, and I want to, you know, sympathize with the caller, but also mm-hmm. let our listeners know that there's so many things we can do to reverse some of these problems. You know, we hear about global warming and pollution, and some of those problems seem overwhelming. And it's easy for people to get kind of depressed about environmental issues.
Sure.
On the bird issues, we've had a lot of success here in Wisconsin. We're home to three federally endangered species, the whooping crane, we've got the piping plover, and also Kirtland's warblers. And we're making great strides with the whooping crane. There's still more work to be done. But also Kirtland's warblers is a species that had not been seen in Wisconsin for many, many decades, and now is beginning to return. So there are some things we can do, and I think the red-headed woodpecker story is an example of how if we take some simple steps, we can actually continue to live our comfortable lifestyles, our Wisconsin way of life, and protect those birds there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Elaine. And Lee in Lake Mills, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Good morning. Thanks for the call and the program. I have a real bone to pick with cowbirds. I come from California, and there we had a trapping program that went on there because it's just a diabolical species that is apparently almost useless and should be eradicated because of their nesting and their predatory habits on young birds.
Well, what do you think, Jeff? I'll start with you.
Well, you know, I think the question that most conservationists face is balance, and nature usually provides that balance. And so not being familiar with the cowbird problem in California, but recognizing that, you know, there are birds that prey on other birds. You know, certainly in Wisconsin, we've seen some controversy over feral cats and the cats' impacts on birds. I know here in Madison, in fact, cats aren't supposed to be allowed out in the yard. You're supposed to have a leash on your cat when you go out. Most people don't follow that, but part of that is to help protect our bird population. So, you know, I hear the caller's concern, but I wouldn't offer a specific solution in terms of eradicating any species. I would look for a balanced approach.
Yeah, Karen?
Yeah, I would add that where the Kirtland's warblers were found nesting in Wisconsin, there was an active cowbird trapping effort because that's one of the success stories in Michigan to bring back the Kirtland's was to trap the cowbirds. But it is a native species. So it has more to do with the habitat. We've fragmented the habitat everywhere, and so that causes the cowbird to make further inroads. There's a lot more here than there were historically.
And on the habitat front, too, I think it's important that your caller mentioned the cowbird, and that Karen says it's a native species. We also have problems with habitat management with other invasive species. So we have invasive plants in particular that have overwhelmed some of our wetlands. There are problems with non-native species. You've heard a lot maybe about the gypsy moth. These also have an impact, obviously, on our bird populations, and those were mentioned in the report as well.
Someone wondered, just back to the red-headed woodpeckers, Chris had called in and wondered whether or not they use nest boxes and if there's something individuals could do, you know, in that fashion. I'm scratching my head trying to remember of nest boxes for redheadeds, but I'm not coming up with anything.
I'm really not sure about that. They do nest in cavities like most woodpeckers do. There's more found in southwest Wisconsin where there's more oak woodlands. I'm not sure if that's helpful. If it's tried, you certainly should be very aggressive about keeping starlings and other house sparrows and such out.
Yeah. And let's see, Jim from Lafarge wondered about the whippoorwills, too. Is that a bird, Karen, that is threatened? He no longer hears their call.
Well, it's not officially threatened, but that is one that declined fairly significantly by about 47% on the breeding bird surveys in Wisconsin over the past few years. And you just don't hear it as often as you do. And there's quite a lot of effort to try to restore those oak savannas, and that may help. The other thing is that... another thing that a lot of Wisconsinites are doing is helping with the what's called a night jar survey. They go out in the evening and listen for the whippoorwills and nighthawks, both of which are in the night jar family. And we're trying to get a handle on where those two species are and aren't, and where we can maybe direct our efforts.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for listeners... You know, you imagine these kind of surveys and the data collection that it took to put together a global report on birds. You know, a significant investment of time and energy and no doubt aided by a lot of volunteers. For the callers and the listeners that are interested in the birds in their community, maybe even in their own backyard, you know, even if you don't know all of the species and don't consider yourself an expert bird watcher, there are things you can help do, and you can help groups like ours and Karen's to keep track of birds by maybe keeping a list. There's ways you can participate online, and each year it's called the Christmas Bird Count. You know, if you're interested a little bit more in sort of if you're a collector, for example, if you're somebody who likes baseball cards or porcelain teacups or something like that, you can also collect bird species by keeping track of the ones that you find and submitting those online. And one great resource is the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology. Their website is wsobirds.org. And you can find links to participate in that Christmas bird count, which will begin here
mid-December.
Few months, I guess it is. I'm losing track of the seasons.
Well, it's not that long. About a month and a half.
It's a good time to go check out the website. And you know, you can do a count right at your backyard feeder if you want, or you could join a local birding group or a local Audubon group to go out on a field trip and maybe learn some new species from an expert guide or a neighbor. So there are ways that people can help continue that collection of data that's so important to the monitoring that work that's done both by nonprofits and the government.
Talking about our bird populations here in Wisconsin, zeroing in a little bit, but also we've been talking about worldwide bird populations as well with Jeff Potter, Director of Communications for the Natural Resources Foundation, and Karen Etter-Hale, Executive Secretary of the Madison Audubon Society. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, you can join us with your question at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Birds today with Jeff Potter and Karen Etter-Hale. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Gary in Boscobel has a question, so we'll go to Gary next. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, Larry. I wanted to bring up the loss of the rough grouse and the whippoorwills and also even the woodcocks and the other ground nesting birds here in southwest Wisconsin. I live right out in the hills where, a number of years ago, we had whippoorwills right in the driveway and on the porch. And the statement by Karen about they believe that it may be habitat changes and woodlands growing in, but I have to disagree with that to some extent, because although the grazing was taken off the farm I live on, it was still practiced on several farms around me, and I really am not sure that it's the habitat change, but my suspicions are that the increase in city people buying up small parcels and preventing hunting and an increase in ground predators like skunks and raccoons, I think, have really wiped out stuff on a major scale. I have coons around my place, and there isn't a nest bird nest around that doesn't get hit by ground predators at some time or another. So I think that there ought to be some research in focusing on small mammal ground predation and on some of these woodland nesting birds.
All right. Well, let's get a reaction from our guests. Karen, first to you.
Well, there certainly would be more than one factor, and that's that would be something useful to study if we can. Somebody could find some money to possibly do that. There is a ruffed grouse study being done out of the UW-Richland Center, or there was, for southwest Wisconsin. And I don't remember the details of that, but the ruffed grouse is one of those species that actually is on about a 10-year cycle. And it's fairly high now, at least throughout Wisconsin, if you're looking at the bigger picture. And over the next few years, it'll probably be heading down again. So that's always been somewhat of a mystery.
And we are seeing, Larry, with changes in recorded temperatures, climate change, that some populations are shifting. And there's been some theories that, you know, Kirtlands have shifted up northernly, in, you know, come back into Wisconsin or come to Wisconsin because of some changes in their, not only their previous habitat range, but also because of temperatures. So there's a host of factors that are affecting birds. Habitat change, or, you know, the caller maybe refers to, you know, irresponsible development. We can grow our communities. We can move into the suburbs. People can have country homes and protect birds. We're not asking people to give up their lifestyles, but to make sure that as they plan their communities and how they want to live, that they make some accommodations for the birds as well. And it sounds like this is a caller too that misses those birds. And I think that so many of us grow up with this connection to birds that you wouldn't want to imagine the silent spring that Rachel Carson talked about in her book in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary, I thank you for calling and your comments. Kristen in Ashland, on to you now. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I was wondering if you could speak about the impact of windmills and the increase of wind power around the state and how this affects bird populations.
Well, that's a really interesting question that I've been interested in for a long time. The key to wind and avian and bat impacts is where you site them. It's very important where you site them. So, for instance, when Jeffrey was talking about the Mississippi River corridor for migrating birds and the Lake Michigan shoreline, especially because it's a north-south one, those would be places that are not appropriate for large-scale wind farms to be put. Another interesting thing is that there's a wildlife research meeting in Milwaukee next Tuesday and Wednesday all day, bringing together all the research that's been done over the last couple of years. And that's very recent research, and we'll be finding out a lot more next week. So some wind farms do not impact birds and bats too much, but in other places they certainly could.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the reasons we established the Bird Protection Fund at the foundation was to fund the kind of research that the caller has questions about and that Karen referred to. One of the projects that we're funding this year is looking at bird migration habitat along the Great Lakes, along especially Lake Michigan. And essentially, it's hard to protect it all. And so the Important Bird Areas program that the state is a part of, we've got 86 important bird areas in Wisconsin, and now looking at hot spots, what I call migration hot spots, what we really need to do is identify the places where we see both the most diversity but also the highest numbers of bird populations that are either native to the state or migrating through, and protect those. And so that kind of information, you know, because I think a lot of us understand the need to change America's energy policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, I want to express the balance, the lesson of balance that nature teaches us. We can actually make some, we can bring in wind power, we can make some changes to our energy infrastructure, and we can protect birds. But the information needs to be there. And that's when the Natural Resources Foundation created our Bird Protection Fund. That was one of the ways we approached the solution, was trying to find those collaborative efforts, those collaborative projects that will benefit not just conservationists and bird lovers, but hopefully benefit maybe the energy companies or other people that are looking at making changes to our landscape as well.
By the way, what I need to have you tell me the website for both of your organizations. Jeff, start with you.
Sure. The Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin, you can make contributions or learn more about the Bird Protection Fund on our website, which is wisconservation.org, and that's W-I-S, conservation.org. And so we like to think of ourselves as all Wisconservationists.
All right. So run that once more.
wisconservation.org. That's wisconservation.org. And right on the homepage, you'll find some links not only to the Bird Protection Fund and ways you can make contributions of any amount, but also updates on the crane population, for example. We've supported the migration of cranes since 2000, the whooping cranes down to Florida, and we put regular updates about the crane population, which is just last week started their migration. I think it was covered here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yep, we did talk about it. And Karen, what about your website?
Ours is madisonaudubon.org, and you can get links on the homepage to the Wisconsin Audubon Council, which has further links to the different chapters across the state,
mm-hmm.
and also to the National Audubon and others. I'd also like to mention that the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative's website is wisconsinbirds.org. And on that, you can find a huge amount of information on important bird areas, on the Great Wisconsin Birding and Nature Trail, and all of the different committees that are involved with different aspects of bird conservation.
And I might just mention that because I think Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative is a good partner to mention. They are a collaborative effort, essentially 165 different organizations interested in bird conservation throughout the state. And this includes nonprofits and government agencies, essentially working together to coordinate their protection and conservation efforts for birds in Wisconsin. And in fact, the Bird Protection Fund at the foundation was set up to help fund some of those WBCI, those Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative projects. So it's a great one-stop place to learn about birds as wisconsinbirds.org.
All right. And Kristen, I thank you again for your question and comment. Appreciate it very much. And Dan in the Dan is up next here. I'm not sure where Dan's calling from here, but Dan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm actually in my car, but I live in the town of Ottawa.
Oh, okay.
Waukesha County.
Okay.
And I just, we built the house in 2002, and kind of good news, I guess, we see more and more variety of birds every year. We have a number of bird feeders outside the home, and this year we had a covey of bobwhite. And maybe you talked about the rough grouse population increasing at moment. Maybe that's why, but I didn't even know they existed here in southeast Wisconsin.
How many did you have?
Not like 13. They'd come out of the field and fast, and then they'd be under the bird feeder, and one of them would keep watch. I actually had to look them up in a bird book just to figure out what they were.
Yeah.
Bobwhite are not very common in Wisconsin, and that's one of the species that was identified as going down throughout the U.S., declining in numbers. It's possible, I have to look at a map to be sure, but there's a lot of game farms that raise bobwhites, and they often escape.
Okay.
So that's a caution. They could be game farm birds, mm-hmm. possibly, in your part of the state.
Okay.
It's possible they're native too, but they're usually found in southwest Wisconsin in that driftless area.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting.
They were around for about 6 weeks. I haven't seen them lately, but they'd be out there morning and night, and they'd be out there for about maybe an hour, hour and a half, and then gone.
Neat bird.
Thanks, Dan, for calling. Yep. Yeah, appreciate the call. And Sheila in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Sheila.
Hello. I have a question about identifying birds. We have some property in La Crosse, and I will see very interesting birds. By the way, yesterday I saw 5 bald eagles, which was really exciting. But I am unable to identify these birds, and I went online and tried to find a Wisconsin website to help me identify birds, and I really couldn't, you know, find anything that was very helpful. So I bought a bird book, but there's so many birds in there. So I was wondering if you could recommend any websites that would identify, you know, strictly Wisconsin, Mississippi River type birds, or a book that's more limiting than one of these, you know, general field guide kind of books.
You're right. There isn't, because there's so many field guides out now and so many general websites that are national or national in scope. There isn't one just for Wisconsin. There's a smaller bird guide though by Tekela, T-E-K-E-L-A perhaps, that you can find in some of the bookstores that is just Wisconsin birds, and it isn't quite as overwhelming as some of the other bird guides. The other one that I would recommend actually is the Ken Kaufman book. It's a little easier to use because in the front it has categories of birds, like the water birds or the ducks, and then you can go directly by the color tabs to that section. So it's a little easier to navigate, I think.
And I would be the first to admit I'm a bird lover more than a bird expert. So I use the Kaufman book and find it really useful. But the best thing you can do if you're interested in learning birds, and it depends on where you are, maybe in your community, but if you can find a local conservation group, maybe there's a nature center or a local Audubon chapter, try to attend one of their meetings. Maybe, when you search online, for birds, you might look for conservation groups in your community, and there's quite a supportive network of people out there. And even if you're an amateur photographer, you don't have a fancy camera or telephoto lens, you know, maybe you can take pictures of some of the birds you see, and you can even post them on some websites or just go visit with some folks. And it's amazing how supportive the birding community is as folks learn about these birds. And sometimes you just need to go to the local shop where they sell binoculars, and it could be that the person behind the camera or behind the counter is a real bird expert as well.
Mm-hmm. So some different things to look for. And thank you, Sheila, for calling. Appreciate it. And Bruce in West Milwaukee, we go to you next. Hi, Bruce.
Thank you for this great show. It's very interesting to hear the multiple effects on the bird population. My question relates to the presence of something that I grew up within eastern Ohio called teasel, which to me seems to be an invasive plant species that may have affected, you know, what sort of habitat birds have to find nesting material or food material from. Are you familiar with teasel as compared to thistle?
Yeah, sure. Karen, you want to start or we go to Jeff?
I'm going to pass this one off to Karen. I am familiar with teasel, and certainly I can speak more broadly about the overwhelming number of invasive plant species we have in Wisconsin. We're not just losing our wetlands and our prairies to development or irresponsible development. We're also losing them to lack of the diversity. We're losing the native biodiversity of our landscape. But Karen can probably speak more specifically on teasel's impact, maybe on birds.
Yeah, a couple of comments, I guess. There is some teasel that has invaded Wisconsin, and I'd recommend that anybody that sees it to take it out. There is an invasive plants rule that is working its way through the process right now that is going to address a lot of these invasive species. I would suggest that burdock is even worse. It has burrs, and some small birds can get tangled in that. So if you see any of that, I would recommend cutting the tops off or digging it out if possible. But also, that brings up the point about getting involved to help birds, not just by cutting burdock, but perhaps to join your local Audubon or bird club, land trust, whatever friends group is in the area. And it's a great hands-on experience to go out there, learn the native plants, collect those, help plant more habitat for the birds. But no, I can't address teasel's specific
and really for impacts. A complete list of some of the invasive species, there's a group called the Invasive Plant Association of Wisconsin. Their nickname is IPAW, and their website is ipaw.org. And that's a great place. Of course, the DNR has lots of resources as well.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have seen that grow over the last 20 years, and I assumed it was in response to climate change. Well, it never grew in cold Wisconsin.
You know, it's funny, too, because, you know, there's a variety of factors, obviously human factors that bring invasives into our state, but sometimes they're brought in by birds and floods. You know, the floods in south central Wisconsin recently, there's some concern that that'll cause some expansion of our invasive plant population as well.
Yeah, interesting. Well,
thanks for your comment.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. Jack in Shawano County, on to you now. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. I second or third the thank you for the program and for having these experts on. I'm calling about three species of birds. We live in Shawano County, north of Highway 29, where forests and woodlands become much more predominant. The birds are titmouse. Saw 2 years ago, have not seen it since. The small rufous-breasted nuthatch, have not seen that for at least 1 year. And cardinals. I've only seen one this year. I used to see several. And I'm wondering if this is a local phenomenon or regional or beyond that. And I hope it's not just regional.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's turn to Karen Etter-Hale.
The cardinal could be a local phenomenon. You'd have to check with additional neighbors or people in your area. Red-breasted nuthatches disperse more widely in some winters than in others. And sometimes we'll see many in throughout Wisconsin and in southern Wisconsin especially. In other years, we won't. The titmouse, however, is probably moving into your area because of climate change. That is the one that is a more southern species and just recently started showing up in the Oshkosh area and in other places. And this is something that we know because of the numbers of birders that are reporting their sightings. And if more people would go to ebird.org/wi, it's very easy just to report birds for your yard or for a larger area. And that goes into a national database that can be used by anybody to look at what is happening with bird populations.
And the caller really sounds like somebody who has an interest and some expertise. So the website, again, is ebird.org/wi. And it's another way, again, we call them citizen scientists. It's the people that go out there and help us collect the data and report on the things they're seeing in the natural areas around their homes to help us get a better idea of what's happening at the state level.
And what's nice is that you can also keep your own records that way. They're accessible to you.
And, you know, just thinking about birds and just going back to Audubon and all the early people and throughout the time, it's really been one of an almost unusual collaboration among average, you know, sort of the average person and the scientist who spends his or her life studying these has been quite a research collaboration, more so than I think for almost anything else.
And I think that's because birds are so accessible. They're everywhere. Like Jeffrey said earlier, you can see them in urban areas, very urban areas, to all the wild areas that we have around Wisconsin.
Yeah, they capture our imagination. I like to say, if you ask a kid, you know, you ask an 8-year-old boy or something to fly, he won't put his arms out like Superman. He'll flap them up and down like a bird. And, you know, I like to say no cape and no tights required. So if there's any kids planning their Halloween costumes this coming week, maybe they can go as a ruffled grouse or another one of our great Wisconsin bird species.
You know, another listener mentioned seeing a couple of pileated woodpeckers near Castle Rock Lake, and and wondered is if it's if those birds are spreading out a little bit more across the state. Or is it rare to see them in Castle Rock here? I wouldn't expect it.
They're found through the northern half to two-thirds of the state, pretty much. And they're permanent residents. Sometimes they will come to feeders, which is quite a surprise to some people because they're as large as crows.
So far,
and
yeah,
if they land on your suet feeder, they're quite dramatic.
Bend the branch down, yeah.
But some other parts of the state, they're more shy and retiring, and you may hear them, but you won't see them.
Yeah, they're interesting birds. I love to watch them. I've had a chance to watch them on many occasions, mostly in the, as you say, in the northern part of the half of the state, but they're a lot of fun. Well, as we think, sort of running out of time here, but some final comments about what we can do and to protect our bird populations, and maybe your own organizations can are a good place to start.
Well, again, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't help promote our Bird Protection Fund, and really what our slogan is: taking action now to enjoy birds always. And so if you really love Wisconsin's birds but you're not sure what you can do, we really encourage folks to make contributions to the fund. It supports the work of Madison Audubon Society and the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, and the DNR supports projects throughout the state. So I'd encourage folks to go to wisconservation.org and make a contribution if they could. But, of course, pass on that love of birds to your friends, your family, and, of course, your kids if you have them. That's the greatest gift you can give to Wisconsin's future, is that appreciation and respect for the bird population that makes it such a great place to live.
Yeah.
Karen? And I would just say, go out and enjoy the birds. It's an exciting time anytime you go out, and even if it's just your backyard, but there's lots to see.
Oh, there certainly is, and I want to thank you both for being with us today. It was a lot of fun and interesting, and maybe we can have you back. So come back and talk with us again. Love to have you.
We'd love to give you an update.
Sure.
Jeff Potter is Director of Communications for the Natural Resources Foundation in Madison, a nonprofit foundation. It works to promote the protection and enjoyment of our Wisconsin public lands, our waters, and wildlife. And again, that website is
Wisconservation.
Let me do that again. Wisconservation.org. I want to say Wisconsin Conservation, but it's Wisconservation.org. Karen Etter-Hale, Executive Secretary of the Madison Audubon Society, have had a lot of fun at the couple of banquets that they put on every year. They put on a nice banquet, and it's always a lot of fun to be associated with them. And their website is MadisonAudubon.org. Well, we mentioned the Mississippi Flyway came up in our conversation, and we're going to shift over to the Mississippi a little bit in our next part of our program, as we talk with Pat Middleton, author of a series of books on the Mississippi, including America's Great River Road, Volume 1, St. Paul, Minnesota to Dubuque, Iowa. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.